I'm glad you're all here this morning, and I hope you come back for this. This is our second session. All right, let's bow our heads. Loving Heavenly Father, thank you so much for this beautiful day and for the time to gather together and to talk about the garden. And you were the first gardener, Lord, and I just ask that you'll teach us today according to what we need in each of our individual lives and experience and how we can cooperate with you. Thank you. In Jesus' name, amen. This is preparing the soil, part one, preparing the soil. For thus saith the Lord, break up the fallow ground and sow not among thorns. Jeremiah 4:3. In this class, we're going to cover soil preparation for the garden. Some of it is intuitive, such as clearing the plot of rocks and debris and digging up the sod. But if you don't want to dig up the sod or you are limited in some physical way, you can
use a silage tarp. I haven't actually done this, but you can see where they have agriculture, big black tarps on the ground. They lay it down. The sun warms it underneath. The weeds die. It actually is, it breaks up things a little bit. The worms like it. The moisture is there. And it'll prepare the ground for you in a sense. It doesn't take the rocks out or anything like that, but it does. The microbes do flourish under that if it's a certain amount of time. You don't want it too long. Thick weeds and grass disintegrate underneath it. Another method is no-till. This is my little granddaughter. She doesn't do a lot of farming, but she pretends. No-till method, you can use brown cardboard to lay it down on top of the grass and the weeds. We use brown cardboard. If you use colored, it has chemicals in it and plastics, and if it's shiny and colorful, don't use it. We go to the hospital where my husband works. We load up the Suburban full of cardboard from the pharmacy. We lay it down in the rows between the strawberries or whatever it is we're working on. And I wouldn't do this between my vegetables necessarily unless you're just doing a path. That will always be there. Because, if you're going to be changing things around, you don't want a heavy mulch. But I put the cardboard down. We put our wood chips on top. And my paths are free of weeds always, which is really nice. So I have watched Charles Dowding on YouTube. He does no-till gardening, and he is a market gardener. And so he's in Britain, but it's still similar. And it's very interesting to watch him. He does a lot of experiments where he does a little plot here this way and a little plot here this way. And it's very interesting. So his name is Charles Dowding on YouTube. He does no-dig gardening, and he has books on Amazon. One other method we tried for no dig was the lasagna garden method. Have you heard of that book? Okay, I bought the book, and I had a really rotten piece of land to work with. The weeds were really awful. The soil was terrible. And so I thought, hey, no harm done. I built beautiful lasagna beds, and we had mixed results. We had beautiful big vegetables. Whoops. I don't know how I missed this, but anyway. We had big, beautiful vegetables. In some places, we had nothing because earwigs actually bedded in those piles, and it became a nightmare of Egyptian proportions. Believe me, you would come out in the evening and you could hear them chewing from the house. We had earwigs crawling everywhere. You couldn't take a step without crushing them. And it was my fault. We lived on the edge of an orchard. There's earwigs in orchards, and they were just prolific. So I never did lasagna gardening again, but it doesn't mean it's not useful in some places, but I would do it slightly different. I would make sure I did those lasagna layers months ahead. A year ahead, 6 months ahead, let it sit all winter, let it compost properly. All those materials need to compost. You don't want to give the predators a place to grow and live. We learned a lot about earwigs that year. We didn't know that earwigs take care of their young. They cart them around and everything. So, anyway, I would not do that again for myself. But we had to take care of the earwigs by putting water in bottles with a little dish soap, and we would go out. It's the only way we knew how to do it. Go out when it was just getting dark and actually spray them. The second the water gets on them with the little soap in there, they curl up and die. But if they don't get it fresh sprayed on them, it doesn't do them any harm. The only other thing you can do is make traps. I think it was soy sauce, molasses, and oil. And little traps all over, and they would gather in big mounds, you know. You can roll up newspaper and they'll be crawling inside, but if you had as many as we, that does not enough. So it took us years to actually diminish the problem that we created by not composting our lasagna layers enough. Okay, I'm going to let you talk about raised beds.
We've mentioned raised beds already a little bit, and it's a question about what kind of wood and all. This is Angela's garden with her, how many did you say? 30 boxes or something like that.
And these are cherry bins. We live in orchard country. That's what farmers do where we live. And then the second picture is apple bins, but they're really deep. So it's just a lot of soil you're wasting.
I think we did our beds 4x8 or 4x12 with 2x10s or 2x12 for beds. Some of you may have seen this, but you can use corrugated materials. It's galvanized, I believe, corrugated material, or you see stock tanks. You can fill those. I mean, they're pretty big, and sometimes they're this tall. So if you're wanting to not be bending and you want to do a raised bed, that might be a really good option. I don't know if a person needs to put any holes in the bottom for drainage. That might be something to consider, or gravel in the bottom so you don't. Your roots, when they go down, and they will go deep, if they get too wet, their feet get too wet, that's a problem for plants.
So there's a book called All New Square Foot Gardening. I have that book and I loved it. It's not practical for me on the level that we grow, but it is great for new gardeners. And I love the way they do the grid. And I use their plans for how many plants you can plant in a square foot. I use that all the time. When I'm out in the garden, oh, I need to plant this. Oh, where's my phone? Look it up. Oh, there. I need to plant so many onions in a square foot. It just is really helpful. So you can glean a little thing from each method and make your own.
And I'll just back to the raised bed idea again. One thing you can do with that is, yes, the square foot gardening, but you can also, it helps you plant more intensely. And I wish I had a picture of this, but I once drew out little triangles. You don't have to plant your plants always in a row. You can stagger them or offset them to each other, and that gives the plants an opportunity. They actually like each other's company, not too crowded, but they like each other's company. And I'm thinking back at how I came across this. You know, traditionally, you make a row, right? And then you have a path, and then you have, you know, each single row is the way I think a lot of people gardened when I was a kid. But if you think in terms of these beds, you have your paths, you have all this growing space where your feet are not tramping on the roots, compressing the soil. And so that's where your gardening is for us to have elbow room too, right? So the plants need that space around each other. But if you plant, like maybe you would do three or five in across a bed of something, then the next row you would do four or two. And then you can go back and forth that way, and it's kind of, you can get more plants in that space. You use your space more productively. The roots have their adequate space. So I found that method helpful.
It's what we do in the flower field. It's always offset like that. It just works. So, okay. Isn't her garden beautiful? And there it is, planted as beds. 30-inch wide beds is what you'll hear the farmers, the market gardeners talking about. It is a standard because the tools fit, your irrigation fits, everything fits really well with that size. Tractor plowing. If you have a tractor, it's very easy and it's very convenient, but there is the downside of plowing too much. You can destroy the delicate biome, microbiome of the soil. It's compromised by tearing up the ground over and over again. There, it's a little community under there. You don't want to destroy everything. You want those earthworms and you want the microbes that grow there. One other downside that you might not think about is every time you plow, you're stirring up seeds that were down in the soil. You're bringing them up to the top, and then, boom, they grow. And you have more weeds than you did last year, and you wonder why. And so you plow again, and you bring up more seeds. And it just continues, you know. And so that's just something to really think about. If you're rotating your crops in zones for the benefit of your health soil, you could potentially destroy your own efforts by dragging the plow through those zones. Also, so we will talk about it a little more later, but you plant your tomatoes here this year, here next year, there the third year, and you're planting beans there, and then you're planting broccoli, you know, and you're rotating for your soil's benefit because each plant takes a different thing. And each plant has pathogens that they leave behind, you know, the diseases or the insects that like them the most. If you're dragging that soil through each biome, you've just destroyed what you tried to do by having a crop rotation.
Rototillers are powerful tools to break up the ground and prepare the soil for planting. And these can have an advantage if you don't have a tractor. If you don't have access to your plot with, you know, larger equipment, they're often necessary. They can be convenient and quick and make your soil perfectly crumbly. However, as with a tractor plowing, overuse of a tiller can actually cause compaction. And we had a little bit of that this spring. We still till with a tractor, but then we tilled early. Our window is either we have a lot of times May and June rains, so if we don't till in April, we have to wait until we get a window, it dries out. But this year, we had a lot of really, really wet June, unusually wet for our region. And the soil compacted after the tilling. And so then it's like, okay, and I'll show you later, but we have actually landscape fabric down, so we're not going to till it again. But so there's some of those things to think about, you know, what's your context and what's going to work for you. And like Angela said, the rototiller can also bring up those weed seeds to the surface. Mulching between the rows is often a better choice for keeping the weeds down than repeated tilling. If you're dependent on a tiller, planting will often be delayed in the spring while waiting for the soil to be dry enough after the winter snow and rain. And this is something I'm actually in the process of rethinking a little bit because where we have those beds, so we usually till like the tractor, and then when all the girls were home, we would dig the aisles. And so we had seven or so aisles, and that's a lot of work to move all that soil into the raised beds. So I'm actually rethinking a little bit because It might be that we'll have more success if we go to another method.
So, gardening doesn't need to be expensive. You don't have to own a tractor. And sometimes we've borrowed the neighbor, just had them come and plow something when we didn't own a tractor. Now we have one, but you don't have to own a rototiller. You can use a broad fork, but you have to be strong. I just got one, and I had to actually steal this picture off the internet. A broad fork is this instrument here that has prongs, and it's about the width of your bed, and you put it into the ground. Mine has two handles. You step on it, you push it down, you pull it back, and then you keep doing. So it's not stirring up the soil, it's just breaking it up. The quick flip is actually really light if you're not strong, and I think it's probably not pictured there. I did have to steal that picture because my broad fork came in the mail and it's not put together, and I have so much snow I didn't think it would look good in a picture in the snow. Just wouldn't. Anyway, I'm leaning more and more towards that. We had a pitchfork and we're, you know, digging with a shovel and whatever, but I think the broad fork is going to be very helpful, especially if you have a tunnel. It's really hard to get the tractor in the tunnel. It's almost impossible. It's really helpful. I use the rototiller maybe once a year in the tunnel, but just if in the flower farm, between the peonies and the lilies, I have this little section. I don't want to bring any equipment in. I'm going to use the broad fork. So it's just... I think that the Dysingers have done some experimenting with no-dig gardening, and they've had pretty good success. You're going to find, if you look on YouTube, you're going to find a lot of information on it. So I'm kind of experimenting with it more and more. I'm not the only farmer on our land, so sometimes somebody will jump on the tractor and plow everything up, and I'm like, oh, I wanted that to be left alone. But, you know, we're learning to cooperate with one another. So, anyway, I just want you to realize that gardening doesn't have to be expensive. You don't have to own all the equipment.
We also want to talk about soil types. I mentioned clay because we have clay loam in our region. Sand, I'll just outline these and come back. Sand, where I first learned to garden at my home growing up in Colorado, we were under the pine trees, and we had a lot of sand. And so it's very loose. Silt is not as fine as clay and not as coarse as sand. And I think you would find silt more in a river basin area or where there's been flooding. Humus is organic matter and is key to productivity. It holds everything together and provides structure to light soils and eases up heavy clay. Whereas clay is fine silt and it holds water and it's often rich in nutrients, but, oh, it'll stick to your feet. You know, it's some places they call it gumbo because it holds a lot of water and it'll keep swelling and swelling. And so it's very, you have to wait till it dries out if you're going to do a lot in that. So a lot of times a combination is better. So do you have more on that? Another question is, how deep is your topsoil? And someone else here was from the Palouse. She's a few hours from us. But the Palouse, when you look out across it, it looks, on a certain days, it looks like the bottom of the ocean, you know, where you see all these rolling hills. And so it would have been where there was flood. I don't know how this is for others, but on our property, if we find a rock, we get really excited because our soil is 6 feet before we get to the basalt. So it's a blessing. I know that doesn't happen for everyone, but also some of our neighbors, there's areas where the soil isn't that deep, and right there is rock and the surface. And so it just depends, you know. But you might want to also know how deep is your soil. You know, are you have a little bit and then you go down to rock, or do you have more depth than that?
I grew up on the Canadian Shield. Didn't have to dig far to get rock. It was, you know, and so there's some places where you just can't garden. It's just too rocky, and that's when you would do the above ground gardening. How high is your water table? You know, are you in a swamp area that's just going to always be wet, or does that change with the season? And what is the water drainage situation? We talked about water drainage and how to figure that out last class. Okay, mulching with compost to build up the soil. This is a process that takes time and patience, but it is so worth the effort to correct your soil types. They say you can fix any soil. I think it would be hard work in some places, but it can be done. So, compost, I should probably flip the slide. Compost is an organic substance that is still in the process of decomposition. It increases the soil life by adding beneficial microorganisms. These microorganisms break down organic waste and convert it into plant nutrition. And in the end, it's your nutrition that you get from the garden also. Compost attracts invertebrates like worms, improving the soil, creating openings in the earth, and leaving nutrient-rich castings. Compost adds coarse structure to poor soil and improves water retention and drainage. The nutrition content of compost and other organic amendments is much lower than that of most fertilizers. When it is mixed with soil at a ratio of 1-4 or even higher, there's a huge but slow release of nutrition being released. Compost increases the nutrients in soil not only by adding those it contains, but by boosting the activity of microbes that release nutrients already in the soil. I'm really starting to understand how microbes work in the garden and how important they are to it. And I didn't used to think about that. It was just dirt, but the microbes are what's making it alive. Testing your soil and knowing your phosphorus levels are important when using compost, because you can be adding too much. There is such a thing as too much compost. And I think a lot of times we're just compost. You really need to test your soil. And our next class, we've asked Lynn Hoag to come and teach us about that. Excessive phosphorus can weaken your plant vigor. So, okay, I did want to make sure, helpmecompost.com is a website you can go to. And I just thought it was full of information on composting and very put out in a very nice form, readable. Okay, so I'll let you talk about this.
Helpmecompost.com. And these resources are listed in the handout, so if you can get that online, then you'll have it. Humus. Stable humus is organic matter which is almost completely broken down into its smaller parts. It has a structure very much like a sponge and has high water holding capacity, up to 80% of its weight in moisture. So some of you are probably familiar with potting soil. You add water to potting soil, you can see how, I mean, it's loose, but you know that it's holding water. That's more the goal of what you're looking for in soil. This very fine structure also holds on to micronutrients and prevents them from washing away. The nutrients stocked by humus are available. Humus. I knew I was going to say it funny. Maybe we'll have hummus for lunch. But humus, the nutrients stocked by humus are available to plant roots for feeding. The dark, almost black color of humus helps warm the soil in the springtime. So if you get to a place where you're looking at property and you see this dark soil, just know you're probably onto a gold mine there. We had some areas of our garden where there had been vegetation growth that had died back over several years, and we tilled that. That was the darkest areas. It is said that humus can help balance soil pH, and it also helps suppress disease.
Okay, we're going to talk about path widths. That can vary according to your needs. In my hoop house, 12 inches. I want to use as much space as possible to grow. I just need to get through. So 12 inches. But in my strawberry patch, that's a terrible strawberry, by the way, but it was picked in September, and I just had to, like, why is it growing now? But anyway, the paths are wider. In the flowers, also, they're wider because we're passing each other with big buckets of flowers. In my garden, I have fairly wide, 24-inch probably, wide paths. It's just ease of being able to kneel and sit with the kids. But you have to decide ahead of time, because once you put your irrigation together, I mean, unless you're from the east and you just depend on rain, you have to keep it the same way, or at least it's best if you keep it the same way. It costs you less that way. The strawberry field, it's fairly wide, almost 30 inches, because I know that I'm going to have people coming into U-Pick sit down with their kids in their buckets, and they need freedom to be able to move. But in my greenhouse, just 12 inches.
Bed widths, so standard bed widths, and in the earlier picture of where showed all of our raised beds there, actually we haven't stuck to completely 30-inch beds, but that has made a challenge, because every year my husband's, when we rotate the crops, he's moving the irrigation lines on the solid pipe. So, yeah. But it does help if you can have, we have kind of tended to stick to either 2 foot, 3 foot, or sometimes I'll do a 4 foot bed if there's something I really want to have a lot of room. But standardizing is much better. And then, oh yes, our grow boxes again. When we began our gardening journey at Weimar, due to the heavy clay soil, we were encouraged to use this ratio. I had a relative who was gardening organically and gave me this. He had told us 1/5 of the soil, and this was in clay soil, 2/5 sand, and 2/5 compost. So if you were in a sandy soil, you would probably want to flip that so that you would have 1/5 sand and 2/5 of your soil. So that year, when we, the second time we ended up adding beds, we thought, let's get some manure. So someone told us, oh, there's turkey compost. So we got a 2 or 3 square yards of turkey compost. That stuff was so hot. We could only use part of it. It hadn't composted long enough to make it viable for, otherwise it'll burn. Your plant's roots and everything, they'll burn and yellow, and it's no good. The ratio that we were encouraged to use in our grow boxes was 1/5 soil, 2/5 sand, and 2/5 compost. But I would assume if you had a sandy soil, you would make that 2/5 soil and 1/5 sand. That was in our clay soil that we were working in, yeah. And then vertical gardening, you know, if you are working with a small space, such as a raised bed or even a small garden, then being able to actually let your plants grow tall, you can, you know, you don't have to let them sprawl, you can let them grow. And we're going to cover this a little bit more later, but cucumbers can grow up, tomatoes can grow up, even some peas. Even some of the smaller squashes and melons can be trellised and do okay. The heavier ones, I think, would probably break some, or I don't know what they would do. So we have used a limited trellising system. Mostly I just put bean posts in. Did I not? I didn't get that in here. I guess we'll get to that later. But we're going to talk about a trellis. This is kind of a play on words, but A Trellis to Make You Jealous by Josh Satin. That's on YouTube. And you've used this.
Yep, I'll let you. That's what you see here. I use 7-foot T-posts. I use the Hortonova netting that we use in our flower gardens. And then we use electrical conduit. And so it's 1/2 inch and it's 10 feet in length. And 1/2 inch coupler lengths and 1 1/4 inch PVC Ts for the middle. I think you can see each post has a T on top. And so those, anyway, if you go to YouTube, Josh Satin, Trellis to Make You Jealous, it works. It's really nice. It's very clean. You will see that there's some bows in it. That's after using strings for tomatoes, and if your tomato plants are really heavy, it will pull those down, but I don't think it's not critical. It didn't ruin it. I may have had too many tomatoes on one. I don't know. So I tend to grow way too many tomatoes. But these peas were over my head. I don't know what happened. Last spring, we had a cold spring, and the peas went crazy. These were the sugar snaps. The shorter ones are your regular garden peas for the freezer. But we had so many snap peas, we ate till we couldn't anymore. Let the birds have them. And then they got so tall on that second picture, they were pulling off the netting. They were just so heavy with peas. So when you plant peas, you plant at least 3-4 rows, because they like each other company, and they like to grow up together, and they hold each other up. So that's what we do. I grow 1 pound of garden peas for the freezer, and 1 pound of seed for the snaps. And I think the snaps, that was too many. I think I'll cut back. All right, we're going to move over to weeds, our favorite subject. Not really, but I have a lot of weeds. One day I walked by the field of an old lazybones and then past the vineyard of a slob. They were overgrown with weeds, thick with thistles, all the fences broken down. I took a long look and pondered what I saw. The field preached me a sermon, and I listened. A nap here, a nap there, a day off here, a day off there. Just sit back and take it easy. You know what comes next? Just this. You can look forward to a dirt poor life with poverty as your permanent house guest. And that's a paraphrase, obviously, of Proverbs 24:30-34. I read it to my nephews when they were little and didn't want to work in the garden. They thought it was funny. Gardening teaches us diligence, observation, perseverance, and forethought. We need to know our enemy. So you've got to observe, observe, observe. And you're like, what is there to observe? How do those weeds come? What are you doing to encourage them? What are their different ways of proliferating? Like seeds aren't the only way that it spreads. They spread by roots. They spread other ways. So know each weed that you're dealing with. The sedge grass that was in one of my old gardens was a nightmare. And the little nuts, I had to actually find all of those in the garden if I wanted to clear a spot. I never actually succeeded. So some weeds don't just produce from seeds. The weed spectrum changes from time to time. The soil chemistry changes, so you have a little bit different weeds sometimes. Your soil temperatures will bring out different weeds at different times of the season. Light levels, weather. So I'm going to let you start here.
In Elliot Coleman's book, The New Organic Grower, he differentiates between cultivation and weeding. Cultivation is the shallow stirring of the surface soil in order to cut off the small weeds and prevent new ones from growing. It deals with them before they become a problem. Weeding takes place after the weeds are already established. Weeding deals with the problem after it occurs. Weeds are in competition with your plants for space, light, water, and nutrition. So, number one, let sleeping seeds lie. Digging and cultivating brings weed seeds to the surface, so minimize soil disruption. Number two, mulch. Don't give weeds the chance to see light. There are many, many things you can do to mulch as you cover the soil. That's one reason why a few years ago, when our help was growing away, we realized, hey, the two of us can't keep up with all these weeds, so we put the landscape fabric. But there's some other challenges to that, too.
Weed early and often. Young weeds go down easier than old ones. So, you know, going out with your hoe on a schedule, early morning when it's fresh and the birds are singing, get your little hula hoe or whichever tool you prefer and just go and check for tiny weeds that are just barely coming up. Chop off their heads. If you can't pull the weeds, then deadhead them before they go to seed, because we use mowers and weed whackers in certain places for that. Never let them go to seed. A single lamb's quarter weed can produce 100,000 seeds. It's a losing battle if you think of it that way.
So we're talking about the intensive planting, you know, where you, rather than having everything in rows, where you stagger the plants. That's one of the reasons why that will help with weeds. So space your plants close together. Spacing tightly shades the soil between the emerging, where the weeds will emerge. And I found that to be really helpful. So a lot of times you'll weed when those plants are small, and then a few weeks later you might come back through and check. But once those plants get up and they're shading that soil, sometimes it may be something here or there that you have to take out. But diligence at the beginning makes a difference. You want to water the plants and not water the weeds you've got. So place drip irrigation or soaker hoses only where you have plants and don't overwater.
Pull when wet, so when your soil is moist first thing in the morning, you can pull the weeds. Hoe when dry. That's just kind of a rule of thumb. Big weeds especially are nice and easy to pull with your hands when the soil is moist and they just come right out. I get really sore hands though, so I don't know if it's old age or what. What do I do with my weeds? Oh, they depends on what I'm working in. If it's the flower field, I take them out and compost them. If it's in my between tomatoes and whatever ground cover I have, I just leave them as shade. Unless there's seeds in them, then I get rid of them. If there's seeds in them, then I'm late. Natural safe herbicides, there's not very many out there, but I did find one that's called Axle, and I don't use it actually in my garden, but between my rows of grapes or something like that, maybe even the raspberries, it's made from vinegar and things like that, so it doesn't leave any toxic chemicals behind. But I wouldn't use it where you're planting your greens. You just want to be very careful. But I thought it was a good idea for in my vineyard. Let's see. Leave no bare ground. Cover crop when you have unused space. Sorry, I'm messing you up there. Use cover crop whenever you have an unused space. So plant clover, plant something. If you're not going to use that space, the clover will then be tilled in and feed your, because it's a legume and it'll it'll feed your soil.
Allow seedlings to grow and then use the flame weeder while still tiny. So, little one. Yeah, it'll just obliterate them. You would do that, though, after, not before you plant your plants.
Yeah, so the farmers who do that, they plow their field, they wait a week or two, then they come through with the flame weeder, they burn off the plants. I don't do it. I've never done it. And then we have a fire ban in certain seasons. We couldn't do it at all.
Yeah, you'd want to be really careful about that. That's adult supervision, young people, so make sure. You don't want to start a fire. Don't use horse manure that is not properly composted, etc. Because hay is full of seed. So unless you're going to try to fertilize your garden into a hay field, you don't want to deal with that. And I understand that manure from sheep and goats, because they're ruminants, their systems break down the weeds. And so that's actually a very good a good source of manure to use. And then pre-emergent. I've just learned a little bit about pre-emergence. I haven't established one to use yet. I'm still actually connecting with an organic popcorn grower to see what they use. But that's something that will keep the seeds from sprouting, the weed seeds from sprouting. And that's something we're looking into, but I thought I'd mention it. You may want to do your own research on that too. And diligence is probably the biggest thing. And I have to say, my husband is the most diligent weeder in our family. He gets out there and gets things before they go to seed. And then transplanting over direct seeding gives you the best chance to get a head start on the weeds. So there are some seeds that you would want to direct seed, but there are many that if you have transplant starts, they're going to just, and then you can weed around them, you can see easily what's there. So, running a hoe through the top, through the bed at the top, 1 inch or so of every 7 to 10 days is really key. And there are some really nice hoes. Johnny Select Seed sells a collinear hoe. It's small, so it can go around your plants without, you know, cutting into them if you're using it carefully. And there's some hand tools for that, too. So doing this weekly until the seedlings are big enough to mulch will totally eliminate a spring headache, and it's easy and fairly quick. And that we have noticed that too. If you start on these things early, maybe you end up weeding two or three times in the summer, but if you do it thoroughly, then when harvest comes, you're not still dealing with so many weeds.
What was that? Horse manure?
Horse manure.
Oh, sometimes it has seeds in it.
Seeds.
Yeah, so always compost stuff before you put it in your garden, because those seeds can be a real problem.
Let me answer that. Mushroom compost, when they grow mushrooms, they use horse manure, but it's already been used, and so that is aged. And you can add mushroom compost from mushroom growers without the seeds.
I've used it, but you compost it first anyway. You have to compost your manure because it'll take the nitrogen right out of your soil if it's not broken down. So for more than just the seed sake, you've got to compost things well. Yeah, 6 months to a year, 2 years sometimes, you know, just depending on the, you need to, if you have, so a farmer down the road from us, he brings us a pile of manure, and we let him put it on the back of the field in a big pile, and we just leave it there for a couple of years. We're not going to touch it. We're not going to use it because it hasn't been composted yet enough. Oh, that's different. It's composted. If you're buying your compost from the store, your manure from the store, it's composted. Yeah, if it's in a bag. If you're getting it from a farmer, that's a different thing. Yes. Where do you get sand?
Your aggregate or cement supply would probably have sand.
You can get it from a garden supply place, too. We have a place that they have gravel and different bins, different types of soils, different types of whatever, rock, sand. You can get a whole load. You get it by the square foot, square yard. Square yard. Riverbeds have nice sand. Yeah, if it's not too rocky. Yeah. Okay, you can't just go take rocks out of the riverbed, though. They won't let you. Eat your weeds. So this is food from our house. The asparagus came out of my mom's patch. The greens came out of, well, some of it is spinach and stuff from the garden, and some of it is just weeds. And then we make the green drink with, I think there's a class by Dr. Emerson. He's going to talk about this green drink. It is powerful, and I can tell you it has done wonders for people in our family. I actually cured a spot of psoriasis behind my ear by drinking that for my food for, well, I think it was a month. Dr. Emerson will have it, and it'll probably be on the handouts on that you can look up and download, even if you're not in his class. Yeah. So lamb's quarters, amaranth, purslane. Purslane is rich in omega-3. We're always looking for omega-3. It's a weed, and it's, I wouldn't say it's my favorite flavor-wise, but it's a weed, and you can add it to your food. Okay, dandelions are a little bitter, miner's lettuce, you know. Okay, weed barriers and mulching. This is how I deal with a lot of weeds, is barriers. Mulching properly applied keeps the weeds, and here I'm falling asleep on my computer. I don't know how to change the setting so that it stays awake. Okay, after this class, I'll get you to help me. It'll come up when it's awake. Okay. It reduces soil compaction and erosion. Mulches protect against fluctuation in soil temperatures, keeping your roots cool or keeping them from freezing, and reduces evaporation and saves water. Okay, so we'll go back and forth on this.
Compost is used as a mulch, is often used by no-till gardeners. Compost is a healthy way to build up your soil, and using it as a mulch prevents weed seeds from sprouting up. If you think of a forest, the layers of organic matter and humus are built up over time, and nature constantly adds to those layers. If you've ever walked through the forest and you kick aside some of it, and you can see that on the top, the pine needles are loose, and then there's some that are a little more composted, but down below, it's very much broken up. That's what happens.
Pine wood chips and barks and needles. Pine needles. Okay, so much. Mulch advice often includes claims about changing your pH and inhibiting nutrition through pine mulch use. Paul Deisinger was the one who alerted to me that it's actually very useful in the garden. He says, use it. We've got pine trees on our land. We've got pine needles. We've got, and then we'd call the guy, the arboritist, I don't know how you say that. Arborist, there you go. To stop, and he drops off big piles of pine wood chips. And so I just wanted to read what the Washington State University Research and Extension Center found, that topically, only on top, applied mulches, whether pine or other wood, have little effect on your soil pH and variable effects on nutrition. It's really, you know, they always said, don't put pine needles on your garden, it'll change the pH. Don't turn them into your soil. They're okay on top. And they disintegrate slowly. So by the time they have composted themselves, it's not going to affect your soil. Contrary to beliefs that pine mulch acidifies soil, pine needle mulch and pine chip mulch only impact the pH if incorporated into the soil, and only then as it decomposes. So that was found in the San Francisco Gate, November 16, 2020. So that's fairly new information. I don't know anything about cypress trees, but what I'm guessing is you probably can use it the same way that you can use the pine needles. So we use it in our strawberries, the raspberries, and in our flower field, and in our grape vineyard, anywhere that I'm not going to actually use a rototiller or something.
Straw is also a way to mulch. It's useful, it's light, and it's inexpensive. This was part of your plague, huh? Yeah. Once you used straw, it contributed to the earwigs, the plague of earwigs that they had. I have used straw like over potatoes and things, but it also can contain seeds. So if it's wheat straw, you know, you may get wheat that will sprout up in your garden because of it. And it also may have been sprayed with pesticides and herbicides, which could negatively impact your garden. The herbicides in the straw can actually kill your plants within a day of application, so get 100% organic straw. And then fabric ground cover. This is plastic mulch. That's your strawberries.
From Canada, and I have actually the website up there. It's made from cornstarch and stuff, so when it disintegrates, it's not the end of the world. And when it disintegrates, we do take it out. We don't plow it in, but you can. It's not full of chemicals. So I put up there the website if you're looking for something like that. It comes on a great big roll. It's a little hard to put out, and you have to dig down and cover it up on the sides. It's a little bit of work initially, and then it saves you so much time. But so we planted this strawberry field in May, and I expect that this year it will be disintegrating, but my strawberry plants will be so big that they'll be shading, and the weeds won't be a problem anymore, mostly.
Did you apply this with a tractor?
We did.
You have a tractor.
We put the roll on the back of the tractor, and then one of us held it, and they rolled the tractor slowly down the... Yeah, there's actually a tool for it, but it's $4,000. I'm not going to buy it.
Okay, this is what we switched to a few years ago. This is landscape fabric like you use under nurseries. Okay, we have 5 minutes. Oh dear, we have a ways to go. This is very helpful for the weeds, but it does take a little bit to get. We have to take the blocks up, take the pins out, and you can get, these are 15-foot widths and run 100 feet. You can get them narrower than that, and I would probably choose that in the future, because then you can do one bed with that if you want. And we make, this is a template out of OSB, and then you lay it where you want, and you burn it with a torch in the holes so that you can have a segmented holes where,
Okay, I'm going to move along quickly here. Leaves, gather up your leaves, mowing them with your mower to chop them up, and that's good mulch in the garden. You can use it in your compost pile too. Grass clippings, if you use grass clippings that haven't been sprayed with herbicide or something. If you get it from your neighbor's lawn, then make sure you know what you're using. Newspaper, I've used it to cover an onion bed. So you lay it down thick, not the colored stuff, just the black and white, because it'll be like soya ink. And then you make a hole and put your onions, and then there's no weeds that can grow in between. Cover crops, seeding legumes and grasses as a cover crop is helpful for more than just inhibiting weeds and preventing erosion. They improve the nutrition and texture of the soil when you use them as green manure and you're turning them in. Legumes such as peas, beans, clover, alfalfa fix nitrogen in the soil. We'll discuss that more later. Manure, I kind of debated whether this actually fits into this category because you have to compost it. So we already talked about compost, right? But I wanted to bring something up, and that is the herbicides that people are using on the hay fields, then feeding the hay to your horses, and then you come along and take the manure. The herbicide is still alive. It still can kill your garden within 3 days. So you need to know, like, if you're getting horse manure from your neighbor, ask them, do they use organic hay? Because you don't want to destroy your garden. Oregon State University website has information about all of that. You can look it up on Google. I probably don't have time. But it's not used on alfalfa because alfalfa is not a grass. And so an herbicide would kill anything with a broadleaf. So they don't use it on alfalfa, so that's a safe one. Our neighbors have a reindeer farm. We live in Leavenworth, and Leavenworth is a Christmas town. It's supposed to look like the Swiss Alps, you know, and it has, everything is done in that Bavarian style. So we have a reindeer farm a mile from our house, and that manure is really good. They don't eat hay. They eat willow, branches and leaves and that kind of thing. And it decomposes super quick. There's a few other things you can use. Mushroom compost, crushed seashells, pecans, coconut hulls if you have them. We don't have them where we live. So anyway, I think that we're out of time. Is that true? We have 1 minute, so we could take one question. Somebody have a question? Yes. Yeah, so when you're building up your soil, I think even you can till some things in, yes. You'd be very careful what you're tilling in, but putting your nutritious things on top works as well. Because when it rains or you're watering, the nutrients are going down. But if you're trying to build up the humus, then yeah, you got to till some of it in. So, and your second question? He's asking if we put irrigation underneath our plastic row. Yes, it's underneath. And that way, when that top stuff disintegrates, my irrigation is still there. But it also protects my irrigation from the straight sun. So, yeah. All right, thank you. We will see you later after lunch.
This media was brought to you by Audioverse, a website dedicated to spreading God's word through free sermon audio and much more. If you would like to know more about Audioverse, or if you would like to listen to more sermons, please visit www.audioverse.org.